Access number 12911, Reel 1.
Canon Rossi, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in Palestrina. It's a little town not far from Rome, of very great importance historically, insofar as a pre-Roman town, the ancient Praeneste.
What did your father do for a living? What did your father do for a living?
My father was in charge of the Scott College Country House as administrator, supervisor. They had a country house in Marino, not far from Rome, where they had vineyards, olive groves, and orchard. And Mackintosh, Monsignor Mackintosh, Archbishop Mackintosh, at the time was rector in Rome, got to know my father. How he did meet him, I don't know exactly. But I got to know him and asked him to take charge of the administration. And that was in 1920, something like that.
It was called Scott College?
Scott College. Scott College, Villa Scozzese Marino.
What exactly was Scott College? Or yes. Scott College?
Yes, see, the Scott College, they had a house in Rome, Via Quattro Fontane, which is now sold to a bank, and they have built a new college out in Via Cassia, and more suitable because Via Quattro Fontane, actually there was no room for students to any activity, if any playground or anything like that. In Via Cassia, they had a better accommodation, although it's further away from the university. So, during the summer, the students did not come home, except after third and fifth year in Rome. They stayed there 7 years. After the third and fifth, they were allowed home during the summer holiday. The other year, they went to Marino, where they had this country house, and they spent the holiday there together. Now, the country house was surrounded by an estate, which was all vineyards, olive groves, and orchard. And my father was in charge of this administration, because they produced a lot of wine, which then they sold. They produced olive oil, which was sold. They produced also orchard fruits, vegetable, which were used by the college. And every week, they used to take a load of the stuff to the college in Rome. That was part of them. My father was in charge of all this. Then when my father died in 1926, my mother continued until the war broke out in 1941, when she had to leave and go back to my native place, Palestrina.
Now, you were telling me earlier, off the record, how you were invited to go to Scotland by Father Mackintosh. Can you repeat what you were telling me?
Well, I was in a seminary in Palestrina when Archbishop Mackintosh, by that time I left Rome as rector and become Archbishop of Glasgow, he came back to Rome and he found out I was in a college studying for the priesthood. So he sent for me and he said, would you mind coming with me to Glasgow to help me with the Italian colony? I said, delighted, because to me it was a kind of second father. I knew him for so long, since I was a young child, that even before telling my mother, I already committed myself to come to Scotland. So when I finished my higher study, I was ready to come to Scotland.
Which year was this?
About 1932-33. But what happened was the Abyssinian War broke out. The result was that McIntosh decided that it would be better if I stayed in Italy. When the Abyssinia War was nearly finished, I was ready to come up when the Spanish War broke out. So again, he delayed my coming to Scotland until 1937, when more or less the Spanish War was coming to the end. He said, well, I think now you can come to Scotland. At that time, I'd only 2 years to go before being ordained a priest. So he said to me, the 2 years, you will continue the study in Scotland, and that will give you a chance also to learn English, because I didn't know English at all when I did come to Scotland.
And so you went to Scotland in 37?
In 37, September 37, beginning, I came to Scotland and I went to St. Peter College, Bearsden, which at that time was the seminary for Glasgow. I was there in 38 and ordained 29th of June 1939. I was ordained at St. Andrew's Cathedral in Glasgow.
When you got to Scotland, what did you find out about the existing Italian community here?
At the beginning, I didn't have much of a chance because I was in college and I didn't have a chance to go out a great deal. I knew then there was actually, at that time, an Italian priest in Glasgow, Father Tonker. But they were not very well organized, as far as I can make out. Don't know the real reason. I know there was a Casa d'Italia, which was more or less also a fascist club, Casa del Fascio, you know. But there was Casa d'Italia, actually, was founded by the Italian, not by the government. Italian in Glasgow bought, at least paid for the property. They were the one responsible. So I didn't know a great deal about the community in Glasgow. All I knew, what I learned from priest, learned from the Archbishop, and a few families I was able to meet during the time I was in college.
Can you repeat to me what you were telling me earlier about the reasons Father McIntosh had for you wanting to work amongst the Italians in Scotland?
Archbishop McIntosh, I've been in Italy for a great number of years, and he loved the Italian, he loved the Italian language, and also he understood their mentality. Now, the Italian immigrant coming to this country found themselves totally different atmosphere. The result was they were lost. Sometimes they didn't know where to turn to. And McIntosh felt if they could have a priest of their own organizing them or helping them or supporting them, it would be easy for them to develop according to their own tradition and at the same time integrating with these people in Scotland. Because I must say this, in my experience, perhaps there's no better minority in Scotland than Italian for integrating with the Scottish people. So McIntosh wanted this kind of to develop through the work of a priest, because whatever may think, the priest has a great influence with the Italian people, had been because of all background and all that.
Had there been any danger of the Italians here losing their faith?
Well, not losing the faith altogether, but losing the practice of the faith. See, they came here and they found this difficulty. First of all, many, many of them, they didn't know the language. The result was, if they went to church, they couldn't follow what was going on. They couldn't get to confession because they didn't know how to express themselves. Their hour of work were impossible, because when they came here first, They had to work from early morning to go to the fish market to buy the fish. Then they had to clean it and everything and be ready to open the shop. And then worked until 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. The thought was that hours really were rather long, and perhaps you couldn't blame them all together if sometime in the morning took a bit of a long lie. The same with the ice cream people. They had to prepare their ice cream long before they opened the cafe. At that time, machinery was rather primitive. I remember one of them in particular telling me about to get the ice cream, they had a wooden container with ice. They put the container with the cream inside, and then while the wife held the ice with bare hands, the man kept turning the wheel until he got the ice cream. Now you can imagine how they finished up. I mean, they were at night, they were absolutely, but they didn't lose the faith. I say this more or less was a question of the practice at the time, because when I came to the camp, and that's really showed it, when I went to Berry, the first camp I was in, which Worth Mill camp, as I narrated my little book, was questioned that they all looked upon me as a kind of leader. I was the priest. There were other very important people, lawyer, surgeon, doctors. Yes, fine, but most of them, they looked to me as a leader. And I was only 24 at the time. But still, I felt that, well, I had to do something for them. So I managed to get in touch with the priest in Berry. It was a long story, but briefly was this. I still kept wearing my collar all the time. So in the camp, we had to clear a room. I suggested we should clear the room where we're eating, because it was just beyond talking. It was just impossible. I mean, the grease and dirt and everything was an old cotton mill, you see. So after finished cleaning, there was a heap of rubbish outside the camp. So the commandant sent for a lorry to take away this rubbish. And the lorry driver saw me and he said, "Hello, Father." Right away I knew that was my man. So I said, "Could you take a message for me?" He said, "Yeah, sure." But I didn't have a paper or anything. So I took a cover of a cigarette case, a Capstan full strength, you know, the little brown packet. And at the back of it, scribbled with a pencil he gave me, because we didn't have it, "Priest in the camp." He said, "Okay, I'll see to it." And later on, while I was in the camp, I saw a clergyman walking up to the commandant's office. I discovered the name was Father Rector. I think he was a Jesuit. And he played the part very well, because the first thing the commandant asked, "How did you get to know was a priest here?" "Oh," he said, "well, I heard there were Italian internees, and I thought they could do with a Catholic priest." So he sent for me, and we didn't know anything about. He played the part very well, I played my part very well, and talked away. And then I said to him about having Mass on a Sunday. And the commandant, the major, immediately said, "No assembly." I said, "Excuse me, sir." I said, "We are civilian internees, and we have a right to religious assistance according to international law." I must tell you the truth. I was bluffing. I knew nothing about international law. by chance the argument. And he said, well, I can't allow it because it means an assembly. I said, well, all right, sir, I'll accept your ruling. But the Italians are anxious to have a mass on Sunday. And if there's any trouble in a camp, you are to deal with it, not me. You are responsible for forbidding the mass. Immediately, permission was granted. And I must say, that's where I said the religion come up again. They were all there. But more or less, I would say, I don't say 100%, but 90% of those interned were all a mass. And they were all praying for them, not so much for themselves. That was the thing that struck me also. Pray for their family. They left the wife, children behind. And they pinned all their hope and prayer that God would help and protect them. And also at the opportunity to hear confession. And also one man, an internee, I discovered later on, quite a famous artist, Severino Tremator. He made a painting for the altar. We had a primitive altar. There again, it was quite funny about the whole thing because, well, to them it was a table and it wasn't nice. So, Father, we have to do something about it. We can't just have a bare table. I said, well, what can I do? I've got nothing here. I said, we will see to it. Okay. Next thing I found there, beautifully decorated with army blankets and a white cloth and everything, you see. I hardly finished the work when here come the sergeant major. Oh heavens, the language. Who, so-and-so this, so-and-so that, so-and-so this, so-and-so that. I said, what's wrong, sir? These blankets belong to me, were stolen. I said, well, don't ask me. I said, all I know, these people volunteer to decorate the altar and I'll let them do it. I said, but if you think that the blankets belong to you, I think you should remove them yourself. You wouldn't do it. He just walked away. He knew right away that he'd be in trouble. So we had their altar there for a few days. We're not there very long, actually, because we're in there about 10th, 11th of June. And by the end of the month, all the Italians were away.
If we can go back earlier to when you first became ordained, which I think you said was 1939.
Yes.
It was then that you really started to work amongst the Italian community.
Well, I was ordained in 39, in June. The war broke out in September. And Italy was non-belligerent. So was not very suitable to have an Italian community starting at that time. So Archbishop McIntosh decided to delay the organizing of this community, and he said in the meantime he can start working in some among the people here in Scotland. So I was sent down to Port Glasgow. I was only there a few months.
As a parish priest?
No, as an assistant. I was only a young person, just an assistant there. And after that, I was interned fairly soon after, only a few months. But there, I began to get in touch with the Italian, because I remember, while I was there, the Nardini or Largs, they had a fairly large Italian community in their work, seasonal work. And they came up and brought me from Port Glasgow to Largs so I could hear confession for the Italians who were there. And also began to find out some of the Italians round about the place. But I couldn't move a great deal because with Italy being non-belligerent, I was limited in my movement. I was limited, and the result was that I didn't go around a great deal, and I was also only finding my way. at that time.
What limitations were put on your movements?
Pardon?
What limitations were put on
them? At that time, it wasn't so evident. But later on, I was forbidden to enter certain areas, protected area. For example, when I came back from the camp, I could not go back to Port Glasgow because it was a protected area. So they were going to send me to Paisley, and I found out also Paisley was protected area. So I was sent to Glasgow itself, in the south side of the city, a parish called Holy Cross. And then when I moved anywhere, I could not stay overnight without reporting to the police. And it was quite strange because at that time we had to go sometime, we had to go for a spiritual retreat in Perth. So I had to go to Perth with the rest of the priests. And when I arrived in Perth, I had to go to the police station to report, and then I had to go over to the monastery. And the priest used to joke with me a great deal and say to me, "It's a danger coming with you. You shouldn't be in our company," because we landed always in a police station every time I went anywhere. The same when I went out on holiday. I was lifted as soon as war broke out, just the same night. I was down in St. Anne near Blackpool, and the police came right away to arrest me, because when I arrived in St. Anne, I had to the police station and report to them that I've arrived and stayed in such and such a place. The result was that the same night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, came along and lifted me up.
How did they behave when they came for you?
Well, I say this as if I was a dangerous element.
Can you describe it?
Well, first of all, 3 o'clock in the morning, roughly, and they got me up from my bed, and I said, "Can I go and see my friends?" There were two priests with me in holiday. I said, "Can I see my friends?" He wasn't very keen to let me see anyone. I said, "Well, at least to let them know that I'm going away." "All right." So I went across the corridor. They followed me. And I must say, I was carrying a camera. And I knew if they got me with a camera, they'd think God knows what. I've been taking photographs in the countryside, and God knows what to imagine. So I opened the door, I threw the camera on their bed, and I said, "Cheerio, boys, I'll be seeing sometime later on." They didn't even realize what was happening. And only in the morning they went to the hotel keeper, they realized what had happened. So I was left at 3 o'clock in the morning. I went to the police station. I was left in the middle of the police station on a wooden chair. There was a policeman facing me with a gun in his hand. I stayed for a while, and then I had to go to the bathroom. I couldn't stay any longer, so I asked, "Could I go to the bathroom?" "Yes." So I got up, I went to the bathroom, and found out the gun was pointing my back. Back again into the chair. Well, I felt, "Oh, heavens, what have I done here?" I mean, I knew that in war things do happen. I mean, I was not just all that stupid and silly, but I felt really, I must be criminals and really dangerous, something like that. But that was the attitude of the whole thing. Was to me, it was rather tense, the whole thing, and exaggerated, perhaps. Propaganda a lot to do with it. The fifth column at that time, remember yourself, was very popular subject. So the result was everybody was a fifth columnist. Everybody was a dangerous person. They never looked at the background of it. I remember in the train, there were another two young men lifted in the same night in St. Anne's, and we had to travel in a train from St. Anne to Lancaster, I think it was. Went to Lancaster Castle. And in journey of the train, one of the young men said, "Hello, Sergeant. I see you're also lifting up the priest." And the answer was very quick and sharp. "Priest, more dangerous than other." I didn't pay much attention, but to me were just these kind of phrases, I mean, the people say. I realized, as I said with the book also, I realized why the man perhaps said that. He had been in Palestine. Trouble there between Arabs and the British and the Jews or one thing or another. And some of the Franciscans had been involved in it. They thought perhaps the man had in mind some of the involvement there. That's his answer. Priests are more dangerous than others. But it didn't have many effect on me. I just went on. I mean, it was not all that important to me.
Were you picked up on the day that Italy declared war?
Yes, same night. 12 o'clock midnight, the war broke out. Declaration of war. 3 o'clock in the morning, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I was picked up.
And then what happened to you next?
I went to St. Anne's police station, Lancaster, and then were put in a Black Maria, myself and these other two young men. And in Lancaster, myself, the worst time I'd experienced what meant a prison cell, because one of the rooms they put us in was probably a cell for perhaps for soldiers and people like that. There was no windows, just a opening in the top, you know, and the bare wood. I was prepared to spend the night there. I was young enough. I mean, at that time, nothing worried me. But no, later on, were picked up in a Black Maria and driven away. Where, we don't know. We're never told anything. Never told anything. Where we're going, what was happening. Never allowed to communicate with anyone. And it was dark at night when I arrived somewhere. And it was definitely a building. I could see a building. I could see what you call wire, soldiers. But I don't know what was it. I don't know what was it. Then it was Worth Mill Camp. We got there late at night, and the first thing happened was were about 16 or 17 of us by that time. They were the first to arrive in the camp, and there was a huge, what do you call, Nissan hut, you know, the army barracks things, and told us to strip completely everything. No, even the fig leaf. And then there were about 5-6 tables around the hall. And at each table was an officer, was soldiers. And we had to leave the clothes beside the door as we entered it. And then went round